Deborah McGregor, Indigenacause. I'm the principal investigator for a project on Indigenous environmental justice. You can find our website by just Googling Indigenous Environmental Justice, York University. And on February 10th, we held a panel to talk about the Wet'suwet'en people and the Canadian state. Now, this panel was held in to replace a talk that was originally scheduled with Vanessa Gray. She, however, was literally preoccupied by occupying the Minister Bennett's office in support, in solidarity with the Wet'suwet'en people. So what we decided to do as a team was to convene a panel to talk about the issue of the day, which was everything that's front page news in Canada around what is happening to the Wet'suwet'en people, what's the nature of that relationship with the Canadian state and others, and what are the different points of view that would happen in relation to this particular conflict, I guess, if you want to call it that. So we convened a panel of youth and student perspectives at York University. So absolutely thrilled that they were able to make the panel on very short notice to provide their perspectives on what they see as being some of the key issues that this context, or some of the key issues that this, as I hate saying the word conflict, although it's kind of a conflict, but it's far more than a conflict. It's symptomatic of long-standing colonial relations that continue to manifest itself between Canada, British Columbia, the governments in Canada, RCMP, and Indigenous people. So it's kind of simplistic, I guess, to call it a conflict when actually it's a lot broader than that. Haven't found the right words. I just maybe describe it best as what is happening to the Wet'suwet'en people by others. So what we are hoping the panel would do is shed light on how what people are seeing in the media, what they understand to be the underlying concerns from different perspectives. What are some of the main concerns that they have around what's happening to the Wet'suwet'en people? That this particular situation is beyond even a pipeline, but symptomatic of centuries old, unresolved, fundamental relationship type issues. So in this first episode, I speak to what I understand to be the broader historical context for what's happening to the Wet'suwet'en people. I point out that these kind of interactions and engagements between the state and Indigenous peoples is not a new phenomena. It's happened before in relation to the Conestatake, or what some people call the Oka crisis. There's been a number of commissions that point to these problematic kind of relationships, and yet they continue. So my introduction to the panel speaks to this context that of the issues that the Wet'suwet'en are facing in their community and in their territory. And then the following speakers reflect upon what their understanding from this particular conflict. Again, a word I hate to use, but I guess that's kind of what it's escalated to.
Thank you, Ruth. So she did that on the spot. So I think what I want to tell you, first of all, I'm not Vanessa Gray. At 7 a.m. this morning, we learned that Vanessa was not able to make it, and we're just hoping everything is okay. But we knew visitors were coming, so there was no way we were going to cancel. And then we thought, why don't we focus on kind of like the I don't like calling this an issue, but front page news on the Wet'suwet'en, I thought, well, let's talk about that. I don't think that's happened in kind of any kind of way at York University yet, and kind of social justice is kind of our brand towards things. So I thought, well, let's talk about that. So I wanted to just provide a little bit of context, and then I managed to cajole this particular panel together on very short notice. So let's give them a hand for coming. So to offer their perspectives, because they're seeing everything you're seeing and working towards this in very different ways. So I thought it was important to have their perspective on some of the key themes and ideas that are emerging from the narrative that we're all being exposed to every day in the news and social media. I have to admit, I don't have Facebook or social media, so I'm kind of out of the loop a lot, but even I knew it was going on because other people would tell me. So I thought we should maybe open up the space to talk about that. So we're still going to talk about pipelines and environmental injustice, but we'll talk more about what we're seeing right now in the moment. I did want to say that we invited Vanessa because she's an amazing person, but we do have a video of one of her talks on our website from 2 years ago. I mean, there's a lot she's been doing since then. We wanted her to come and talk about a lot of the work that she's been doing over the last 2 years. So if you really wanted to listen to Vanessa, you do have access to that. So we are recording here because when we have events, we try to record it so that we can make it accessible to people who couldn't come and who might be interested 2 years later. So we're hoping that we're able to do that. So hopefully I will only be 20 minutes, but I am a professor here, so it's likely I'll drone on longer than I'm supposed to. But the idea is that I will stop. And then we have Hillary here to share his perspectives on themes that are coming out, what's going on, because everybody on the panel is hearing things, and we're trying to, you know, sort of have more of the truth kind of emerge, or the kind of questions we should be asking ourselves about what we're seeing, particularly in the media, and that's all kind of selected, what we're seeing in the media. Then we have JC here. Ali, he probably only got a couple hours notice. And Monica as well, who works on the project. So offering different perspectives for you to think about. Then we want to hear from you as well. So hopefully there'll be the space for you to do that as well. So that's the intention of today. People might be wandering in and out. There's food here. We have Ethan helping out. He's recording. We have Amelia at the back trying to keep everyone sort of in some kind of control, managed herder she is, and Dale is coordinating, handing out cards. What I want you to do with those cards is, because we want to be more proactive on this issue and others, is getting some of your feedback. What do you want to learn more about based on what you heard today? And we'll try our best to respond to that if we can. That's where we hope that we'll be able to do that, because I think that's what university should do, is we should serve people and create awareness beyond the walls of the university or the campus. So thank you for that opening, Ruth. Ruth has been a leader here, a champion for Indigenous peoples and scholarship at this, and students at this campus since she's been here. So I wanted to, since she was here, I wanted to acknowledge the work that she does and how she's an advocate. Tireless advocate. She always looks like she's got lots of energy to me. So the first thing I wanted to say, so I had to pull some notes together, because again, I can drone on, and I will stop at some point. I wanted to make it clear that none of us are Wet'suwet'en, so we can't represent Wet'suwet'en people and their point of view. We can only speak to, as people who are extremely concerned about the violence that we're seeing, the aggression, that injustice, that we have an obligation to talk about that and to act on that. So that's the perspective that we're coming from. We're not Wet'suwet'en. And they've got amazing resources, and we'll be putting a lot of this on our website, sending it on our listserv so people can access it as it's happening, so that they can learn directly from Wet'suwet'en perspective. But I imagine that they're being pulled in about a million different directions, so we have obligations to step up as well. So I want to make that clear. I would not speak for Wet'suwet'en. They're quite capable of doing that themselves, and they've been doing it for some time. So I think one of the ways I wanted to frame this was, because the way that I find a lot of the media is focusing on this particular situation. I call it more like a Canadian issue. Like, to me, Canada's got the problem. And is that the gaze has been on the Wet'suwet'en. Look at what the Wet'suwet'en are doing. And I'm thinking, so part of it is to kind of shift that gaze to Canada and the Canadian state and saying, well, what are they doing or not doing? And what have they been not doing or doing for a very long time? Like, this isn't a new thing. This is kind of a pattern that Canada has. So what we're seeing now, if any of you, you're way too young. If you were around during the Conestogaque, or what people call the Oka crisis, it was very similar. So this is a pattern that we've seen before. So to me, it's like, instead of going, oh, look at the Wet'suwet'en and they're doing and their supporters, it's like, well, a bunch of other people are doing other things. And that's kind of, you know, what we're seeing very visibly, but that's not actually in my view, the problem. So we're seeing this national, international news. To my knowledge, unless someone corrects me, because I wasn't on social media, it's like 20 people have so far been arrested since over the last few days.
Some were arrested last night.
Some more again. So Wet'suwet'en people have faced aggression and violence, but not only Wet'suwet'en people, but so have their supporters. Mm-hmm. I was shown an extremely disturbing video of a car going right through. So there is a lot of aggression and violence that's occurring. So then it's like we ask ourselves, why? What's really going on here? And what do we need to know? So I just wanted to kind of hit on a few points. Like, when I think about what's going on, again, I just go, well, I don't think Wet'suwet'en are, from my point of view, not the problem here. It's the Canadian state, its laws, its policies, its governance, its historical colonial roots. So it's got long, long historical colonial legal roots in what's happening right now. So I usually like to return to like some of the work that's already happened in Canada. So we have the Royal Commission on Aboriginal People, which was established because of the Conestogaque or Oka crisis, because there was a huge problem with this relationship between Canada and Indigenous peoples, which manifested through that situation. And what the finding for the Royal Commission on Aboriginal People said, when it was finally released in 1996, is whatever it is that Canada's doing in relation to Indigenous peoples is wrong, historically and now. So that's not top secret. You can find this if you Google it, probably within, you're really quick, probably within 10 seconds. It would take me a bit longer, but you 10 seconds. Truth and Reconciliation Commission, 2015, the same thing. Their major finding was Canada was genocidal and a colonial state. So we know this about Canada. They're wrong in relation to Indigenous people. They're a colonial genocidal state. June of 2019, the Murdered, Missing, and Indigenous Women's Report comes out and says the same thing, and Canada's patriarchal, very violent towards women, very gendered in terms of its in terms of violence and racist, all kinds of other things you can say about Canada. And it's ongoing. It's not just historical, it's still now. So we have these commissions and inquiries that have come out with this. So it's not like top secret in Canada that this is occurring. So we know that Canadian society and its institutions and laws historically to the present day are racist, patriarchal, and genocidal. So if you know that, when you see what's happening, like, it shouldn't really be a surprise. There should be some way of thinking critically about what's going on. And again, we've seen this before. And sometimes in these kind of discussions, colonialism is also kind of the elephant in the room. No one really wants to say that, but it plays a huge part in how a lot of this plays out. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this because there's a lot of text. Again, because I know that you're really super good at this, you can Google it very easily. So the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People speaks to Indigenous people having the right to their territories and to govern in the way that's appropriate according to their laws and traditions. So again, and Canada's agreed to this as well. And British Columbia trying to take it a bit further by having an act in relation to this. But what I did want to point out, because one aspect that kind of stands out, that's coming out in the narrative around what's happening to the Wet'suwet'en is FPIC, Free Prior Informed Consent. So they obviously clearly have not figured that out. And I've been in a lot of spaces with elders, and EPIC, I think is being maybe taken up by the state and others as a kind of a very abstract kind of idea without really thinking about what does this actually mean on the ground? What does this mean when you're in a community and you're confronted with this kind of decision like they're being confronted with? And so one of them, they always say is, well, who? Like, who's going to give the F pick? And in this case, certain people were privileged in the situation who are consenting, and other people are not. So clearly there's, you know, people who are not included as part of that big question around around who. I mean, we could go further into dissecting FPIC, but that's a major issue that's coming out in this particular situation. British Columbia is coming out with the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples Act, ironically. I don't exactly know what the logic is around that and what's playing out. And they are talking about FPIC. Have they got consent or not consent is kind of one of the questions. And they do imply, Canada does anyway, federally, consent doesn't mean veto. So they're kind of taking a particular view of what this means. But every single one of those words we can talk about and figure out exactly what that means. And then this is all being framed around this way, a bigger, broader framework around reconciliation. Like, what does that mean? Like, is this what it is? Like, hopefully not, but. And then one of the other narratives that's coming out that I think there would not be a lot of knowledge on because it's just kind of emerging, kind of in the landscape, probably Idle No More kind of brought it out. It was always there, but never kind of like I'm starting to see it, is this discussion around Indigenous laws. What are they? How do they come into contact? People are talking about they've been here for a long time. Wet'suwet'en people are following and exercising their laws. So what does that mean and what does that look like? And I'll just read you an excerpt from the opening statement from the Gitxsan Wet'suwet'en, because this is also related to court decisions, which we won't be able to get into today, but maybe in the future I'm talking to colleagues in the law school to say, I think we need to talk about this. And but the way I look at it is Indigenous peoples had their own laws for thousands of years. So it's not new, it's always been there. It's just finally now becoming into the conversation, now becoming into the, becoming part of the conversation. And from my point of view, when I read you this excerpt from the opening statement of the Gitxsan Wet'suwet'en, it looks to me like Canada and its institutions and proponents are actually breaking Indigenous laws, and there hasn't been a consequence for them doing that. And the reason I'm going to read this is because they say it far better than I ever could. So you can look this up too, the Delgamuukw decision. So this is the opening statement. I've never been able to find it online, and you can see, look at my book, it's like all falling apart. All my sticky nails, this is one of my favorite books in the world. Can't find it, I can't. When I first started teaching at York, 30 years ago after OCA, I just broke it. But actually, I do have another one that's not broken, but I... But this one, I know, this, and academics are scandalized. Younger people are like, oh, you just get that online. It's just like... I'll just
can't
read it.
Put sticky notes online as clearly. Yeah. I know.
You can't flip around. Like, I have time, and they challenge linear concepts of time, but that's another discussion. So, and the reason I like this, because what they were doing is they knew that people didn't understand them. They knew the legal system didn't understand. They knew Canadian society didn't understand them. They knew British society didn't understand them. So they knew, I know this is being recorded, basically they knew they had to try to explain their laws and their worldview and everything to idiots. Because that's like, you know, because people aren't trained to understand this kind of stuff. So they knew that. So they knew that we have to explain who we are. And so there was all this work that was put into the opening statement to explain. And they start off with their laws. So I just wanted to read it to you because they say it way more eloquently than I ever could. So this is how they talk about their territory. For us, the ownership of territory is a marriage of the chief and the land. Each chief has an ancestor who encouraged and acknowledged the life of the land. From such encounters came power. The land, the plants, the animals, and the peoples all have spirit. They all must be shown respect. That is the basis of our law. The chief is responsible for ensuring that all the people in his house respect the spirit in the land and in all living things. When a chief directs his house properly and the laws are followed, that original power can be recreated. That is the source of the chief's authority. That authority is what gives the plaintiffs, the chiefs in this case. It was the hereditary chiefs actually who brought this forward. So they were the plaintiffs in this case. The chiefs have the right to bring this action on behalf of their house members, all Gitxsan and Wet'suwet'en, on behalf of Gitxsan and Wet'suwet'en people. That authority is what makes the chiefs the real experts in this case. Think about that in terms of who's agreeing to things and not agreeing to things. My power is carried out in the house history, songs, dances, and crests. It is recreated at the feast when the histories are told, the songs and the dances performed, and the crests displayed. With the wealth that comes from the respectful use of the territory, the house feeds the name of the chief in the feast hall. In this way, the law, the chief, the territory, and the feast become one. The unity of the chief's authority and his house's ownership of his territory are witnessed and thus affirmed by other chiefs at the feast. By following the law, the power flows from the land to the people through the chief. By using the wealth of the territory, the house feasts its chief so he can properly fulfill the law. This cycle has been repeated on my lands for thousands of years. The histories of my house are always being added to. My presence in this courtroom today will add to my house's power, as it adds to the power of the other Gitxsan Wet'suwet'en chiefs who will appear here or who will be witness to the proceedings. All of our roles, including yours, will be remembered in the histories that will be told by my grandchildren. Through the witnessing of all the history, century after century, we have exercised our jurisdiction. The Europeans did not want to know our histories. They did not respect our laws or our ownership of the territories. This ignorance and disrespect continues. So I'll stop there. But anyway, it's really cool reading if you can find this and I can pull my book together at some point. But I thought I would read that to say that this is not new. So this decision, they put that together in 1987. Delgamuukw, the Supreme Court decision, came out 10 years later. But they've been exercising their law and authority and jurisdiction for decades before that. There had been encounters with the state prior to that. So this is not coming out of nowhere for the Wet'suwet'en people. So even within Canadian law, my colleagues tell me in the law school, is that even in this case, Canada's breaking its own laws because Delgamuukw also recognized Indigenous law. So lots of laws are being broken in this case. So I just wanted to kind of touch on this, and I think the panel also might comment on this, is what you're also seeing is a narrative between the hereditary chiefs and sort of the Indian Act-led led chiefs in this particular issue. But again, the Indian Act's a colonial construct that's been imposed on people, and I don't think it's so binary myself. Like, I think when basic human rights are not met in First Nation communities, as they're not, so there's water crisis, so it becomes attractive is not the right word, where you want to try to solve those problems through these other ways that are not being delivered on by the state, when basic human rights are not being met. So people look to other kind of solutions. So it's not as simple as this division, I think, as a lot of the media makes it out to be. Like, it's a lot more complicated and nuanced than that. But with the Delgamuukw, we know it was the hereditary chiefs who brought this forward, and they have these obligations to the, that doesn't exist there under the Indian Act, because that obligation is to the state under the Indian Act, not to the land and not to the people and not to the spirit or the ancestors or the animals. So you have a difference about where that comes from. So you're aware of what's happening in the media. I think probably what irritates me most is that those people are lawless. And I'm like, actually, they're the ones upholding laws. More so for thousands of years and upholding laws. So that's why I think we kind of need to reframe how we think about this and the kind of questions that we ask. Everything's about asking the right kind of questions a lot of the times. Is a problem with Wet'suwet'en or is a problem Canada? And people who are part of those institutions who are not doing anything. So I wanted to, that's just sort of the context, just to kind of get you to think about things. And again, hopefully there'll be more coming that we can hopefully try to deliver to you that people are interested in, and again, we'll be providing resources. So with that, I wanted to turn it over to the panel, just so you get different perspectives on this. What are people seeing? What are people thinking? And then we'd like to hear from you as well. So thank you for tolerating me not being Vanessa Gray. And I don't even tell you who I was. Did you guess?
No.
That's, you have to figure that out by the end of the... Who was that woman? So she just came in with some papers and started talking. So I'm Deborah McGregor, and I am the principal investigator for the Indigenous Environmental Justice Project. I'm also a professor here at York in Environmental Studies and at Osgoode Law School. I'm Anishinaabeg from my Wiktishaawr First Nation, and I am just really happy that you came and are sharing this talk, and you're being patient and you're being creative. So thank you for coming. So we'll turn it over to the panel.
So after I shared my remarks, providing some of the broader context and some of the history in terms of Indigenous state and non-Indigenous relations in Canada, just to provide some context for what might be happening or is happening with the Wet'suwet'en people, the panel followed with Hilary McGregor, J.C. Chiblo, Ali Hermanitz, and Monica Shafik. And so they presented their points, and these will be followed in separate podcasts. They provided very insightful and I find helpful comments and a path forward for how people become engaged in solidarity with the Wet'suwet'en. Miigwech for listening to this podcast. And I would like to point you also to the whole suite of podcasts, which you can find on the Indigenous Environmental Justice website at York University. You can hear from all the speakers who participated on the panel on the Canadian state and Wet'suwet'en people. Also on the website, you can find further information on any other kind of activities and events that are occurring in relation to Indigenous environmental justice and the Wet'suwet'en people. Miigwech. Go!